Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the lucky 13th of December, Anno Domini 2014. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edrick.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues, here comes the news. First, let me say you guys were great the last 2 weeks.
Very hard to fill your shoes.
I have big shoes. Yeah. I have 9EEE. It's the width that gets you every time.
Definitely.
Sony Pictures got hacked, and the hack was already bad, but it's getting much worse. The November 24th hack has evolved into an international crisis filled with extortion attempts and embarrassing leaks that include details about the lives of Hollywood celebrities. And everybody's guessing this is all because of the Hollywood studio's upcoming release of The Interview, a comedy about a plot to kill North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Sony executives, what happened was a bunch of emails, a bunch of movies were all stolen from their hacked websites and released to the public. And Sony executives clearly are a rude group. In emails to Sony Pictures chairwoman Amy Pascal, producer Scott Rudin called Angelina Jolie minimally talented and a spoiled brat with a rampaging ego. Pascal emailed Rudin about asking President Obama whether he liked Django Unchained or other movies about blacks. Jolie was photographed giving Pascal a nasty look on Wednesday at the Hollywood Reporter's Women in Entertainment breakfast. Other emails show that Sony employees are fed up with the boring, unimaginative movies the company keeps producing, like mundane, and this is a quote, mundane, formulaic Adam Sandler films. Boy, you're preaching to the choir. Meanwhile, movie scripts and even entire films were made public. Leaked emails revealed that the next James Bond movie, Spectre, is massively over budget and on track to be one of the most expensive films ever made, costing more than $300 million. Hackers have exposed the secret aliases of A-list celebrities. It's now public knowledge that Tom Hanks goes by Johnny Madrid. Sarah Michelle Gellar sneaks around as Neely O'Hara. Jessica Alba is Cash Money for some.
It was a fake name. Those are all fake names.
They're clearly.
They are fake names, but they are clearly fake names.
Well, Neely O'Hara could almost be real. Almost. Yeah. The hackers also exposed the social security numbers of Conan O'Brien, Sylvester Stallone, and 47,424 other Sony employees and contractors. There seems to be a major pay gap at Sony that runs on gender and race lines. White men make up to 15 of the 17 people at Sony Pictures who make more than $1 million a year. The hackers had tried extorting Sony executives 3 days before the hack. Among the leaked documents, reporters at Mashable discovered a threatening email to Sony Pictures CEO Michael Lighton, Pascal, and others, that said the compensation for it, the money compensation we want, pay the damage or Sony Pictures will be bombarded as a whole. North Korea applauds as Sony stays mum. There's evidence that North Korea is behind the attack. That country's government now denies responsibility, but calls the hack, and I quote, a righteous deed, as do three of our users. Meanwhile, Sony is staying mostly silent as the FBI investigates what happened. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is the Sony hack. And your choices are a horrible thing, pretty bad, meh, good for them, and a righteous deed. Now, so far, meh is winning. It's got a horrible thing and Matt are tied at 8 votes apiece. Beg your pardon. Pretty bad gets 4 votes. And a righteous deed gets 3 votes plus 1 from Kim Jong-un, who probably isn't actually voting for this. So that's 23 votes right now. And you should vote as well at soundbites.org. When you're done, of course, you'll want to have more to say about this. I know you will. So if you go down the list on the right there, under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums, or fora, or fori, I suppose. And if you click on that, it will take you to our forums. The second one on the list is the poll discussion. And if you click on that, it will take you to the list of current discussions. The top one being 13 December 14, the Sony hack, of which there are already 5 posts, and I bet more to come. So join us there. And, of course, give us a call. Tell us how you feel about the Sony hack or anything else you want to talk about, particularly your computer questions at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
A couple of news sites are reporting that Sony has shut down all of their filming locations.
Right.
Just in case, you know, something else goes wrong.
Well, because part of what was exposed were where all those movies were filming.
Yeah. Although, in each city, you can pretty much tell there's a movie filming. When Spider-Man was being filmed here last year, we all knew it.
And all pretty knew it.
People were standing on top of buildings and shooting it with their cell phones.
Yeah, we got a million really horrible, blurry, crappy little videos of the Spider-Man filming.
Yeah, but no one has a list of at least it's published yet. What movies Sony is filming? So they may not have anything good.
Right.
that it would be that big a deal that they shut it down.
Right. Well, I was particularly interested in how the Sony people themselves are saying that Adam Sandler movies are crap. I honestly cannot disagree with that.
But somebody pays for them. Whatever crap movie comes up, somebody pays for it.
Somebody goes to see it. There's no question to that. But it's what they're basically saying is that makes us money, but it doesn't make us a good studio.
Yeah. I read something interesting on some blog this week about the middle-level movies are having a hard time getting made now. It's the super low-budget, you know, guy in his backyard movies for, you know, $10,000, or the mega blockbusters for $300 million.
Right.
Those middle-range movies, you know, the $100 million movie.
The cheap $100 million.
Yeah, they can't get made these days.
Yeah. It's tough. It's a tough business right now. You want tentpole movies in the summer and in at Christmas, and the rest of the time, the industry doesn't seem to care whether you go to the movies or not. Which is, of course, one of the reasons that Netflix and Amazon Prime are doing so well, because they'll put out stuff anytime they want.
Yep.
You know, and so they will plan to make sure that their stuff comes out. During those times, you're going to be staying home anyway.
Yeah, they don't have to wait for the summer blockbuster season or the spring blockbuster. So there's always a blockbuster season.
Right, particularly if you're staying home. It's a dead of winter.
Yeah.
You're going to stay home anyway. They know when people are watching.
Yep.
Right. All right.
Do they know if we've been good or bad?
Yeah.
by the movies we watched. Yes.
Good means watching more movies.
To them.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Andy. From Rochester, New York. What's up, Andy?
Hey, welcome back.
Thank you.
Two questions related to software. Vast versus Lookout. I was looking around the Security Tango for a different reason last week and saw that you had recommended Lookout for Android devices.
Yep.
I put the Vast Mobile on my phone, I don't know, 6 months ago.
Yep.
And so I'm looking at it going, okay, would the two bang heads on each other? Should I take Avast off, put the Lookout on?
No, Avast is fine. Avast is an excellent product. Avast for Android or for Mac, you know, it runs on dang near everything. And it's a very nice product. I don't have anything against it. The main reason that I originally recommended Lookout was because it was the only one. And also it does other things. If you pay for it, it'll do things that were not available at the time. Find my phone, lock my phone. Now you get a million products that do that.
Mm-hmm.
But in the beginning, the only one that did all of that stuff was Lookout.
Okay. If I put both on there, they wouldn't bump into each other?
Yes, they would. Yeah, like with any other antivirus thing, You really just want one on there.
Either or.
Yeah.
Okay.
And either is fine. They're both good products.
And you can try the free versions of each and see how you like them. Take one off, put the other one on.
The Avast is already there, and I don't use the phone to do any purchasing or anything like that. So
Death
of least resistance, stay with what I got.
Yep. Stay with what you got. You're good.
Okay. Second question. PDF software.
Yeah.
Used to, way back in the XP days, I ran Nuance's PDF Creator.
Sure.
Reasonable product, but they didn't update it, or they completely stopped it and changed it. Now it's Power PDF. Looking around reviews and things, there's talk that Nuance is going to be bought out by either Samsung or Sony to get the voice recognition technology to fuel Siri or
there's some Apple rumors in there, too. They were going to buy them,
And they're going to throw all the other products to the curb. Their registration process is cumbersome and gets in the way of various things.
Sure.
Things like
what
that.
What is it you want to do with a PDF product?
First and foremost, I want to be able to create them.
From what?
So that when I have a document, I want to send it to people, and I know they're on different platforms, I just say print, make it a PDF document, it pops up, and I attach it to an email, and it's gone.
Right.
Once in a while, I'll do a form, but not that often anymore. So the main thing is creating PDFs.
And
I use Adobe Reader to read them.
Sure.
But I need something that I can create with.
What program do you use to create your documents?
Word.
Word has a... the newest versions of Word will let you save as PDF.
I got an old version.
Okay, then...
OpenOffice.
2000, I think.
OpenOffice will do it as well, but...
Okay, I've got... What have I got?
Yeah, there's a bunch of PDF creators for Windows, and there's a couple of them on the web where you give it a Word file, and it sends you back a PDF.
Yeah, OpenOffice, though, has been doing it for years.
Yeah, a lot of programs have it built in now.
Okay.
Now that it's become the de facto standard, a few years ago, Adobe, they didn't quite open source the code, but they made the specifications open, so anyone can add PDF functionality to their programs.
Okay.
There's also, there are also PDF print drivers. Right, so if you go to print, one of your choices would be print to PDF.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like saving it as a text file, only you've now created a PDF out of it. So that's doable as well. If you used, for those of you who use Google Docs, you can download as PDF so that you can send it to other people that way. Any of those things. It's a program called Qt PDF that will do the similar thing.
What is it called?
Qt PDF. Okay. Qt PDF.
PDF.
And that I think runs. What version of Windows are you using?
7 Pro.
Yeah. Okay. That'll work.
It goes all the way back to 98.
And then it requires GhostScript, which is also free. So you would need both of those in order to create a PDF document on the fly.
Did you say OpenOffice does it?
OpenOffice does it automatically. In fact, there's a button right on the button bar. Click that, and it saves it as a PDF. Boom, you're done.
Okay, I gotta look and see which. I downloaded one of the free Office suites.
OpenOffice or LibreOffice are essentially the same code set.
Yeah, I have them both. Okay, last thing real quick. You told me to let you know I decided to go tablet or...
Yep, go.
I went Google Chrome.
Good for you. I think Chromebook?
Yep.
Good for you. Good product. Buy my book.
I won't see it till Christmas.
Right. All right, we got to go. Take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
We've missed that dash for the mic in the I'm Steve Ray. That hasn't been around for a while.
Yeah, really.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, it's back to sound bites. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. You know, PC prices are the lowest they've ever been this holiday season, but even after the deals end, cheap PCs will be around for a long time. Concerned about the long-term impact of falling PC sales on its cash cow Windows and Office businesses, Microsoft has loosened its grip a bit on PC makers. That's why Windows PCs have slipped below the $200 mark recently. Walmart even sold a $99 PC tablet on Black Friday. Microsoft's Chief Operating Officer Kevin Turner acknowledged that Microsoft has been charging PC manufacturers less to install Windows on their computers. Microsoft has historically charged PC makers about $50 per Windows license. That's exactly right, ladies and gentlemen. A minimum of $50 per PC when you buy one goes directly to Microsoft. But PCs are...
Which is annoying because they charge us $100.
Yeah, exactly.
Or $200 for a full license. Yeah,
they do, exactly. But PCs are an incredibly low-margin business. You can't sell a $200 PC if Microsoft is going to be pocketing a quarter of the price. Microsoft hasn't announced pricing for Windows 10 yet, which isn't expected to debut until late 2015. Even though Turner said Microsoft refuses to make Windows 10 a loss leader, he conceded that things will have to change. We've got to monetize it differently. Turner said about Windows. It's a very fascinating transition for us, and we're finding new ways to monetize the lifetime of that customer on those devices.
They're trying to salvage from Windows 8.
Yeah, they're trying to make... They're trying to make money is what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and 8 was a big flop like Vista and ME were. So, you know, it's a...
I kept waiting for the wait till Windows 9 ads to come out, but they skipped 9 and wait till Windows 10.
Right, which won't happen for most of a year now.
Heck with the ads. Yeah, it's due out in April.
Yeah.
That's the development beta, not the general release.
Right, that's not the general release. That's not till late, maybe this time next year. As Windows revenues shrink along with declining PC prices, Turner said that Microsoft expects to make up the difference by just selling PC owners subscriptions to Office 365, OneDrive Cloud Storage, and other Microsoft-owned services. The average selling price for Windows PCs over the last few months has been $430. That's the lowest pricing for Windows computers in history. Prices were about 10% higher at this time last year. Those super low prices are helping drive moribund PC sales significantly higher. PC sales were up 16% over last year in the first week of October, all driven by sub-$300 PCs. Microsoft is trying to fight off the insurgent threat of Google's Chromebooks on the low end of the market. But the focus on boosting the low end is hurting sales of higher-end laptops. Sales of PCs that cost more than $300 have fallen by double digits during the holiday shopping season. That's a concern as Apple's MacBook sales have grown far faster than the rest of the PC market. As Microsoft fights the battle to the bottom, it stands to lose its hold at the top. So how important is pricing in buying a computer to you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Well, that's the whole thing. Right now, with there are no whiz-bang computers out there that folks are just itching to get and have to have. They want something like a Chromebook.
They want Chromebooks.
They can get that for a couple $100. If something happens to it, no big deal. It's disposable.
Throw it away and get another one.
They'll get another one. But it's just as powerful as their big-end laptops.
Yep. I almost think that price is too big a consideration for people looking at computers. They look at that $99 Walmart computer, the $299 whatever, and it's going to break in a year, and you're going to throw it away and have to buy a new one. And it won't have enough memory. It won't have a fast enough processor. We see this at our store all the time. People come, I don't do much with computers. Just surf the web and check email. Okay, what websites? Oh, I go to Facebook and play games. All right, now you're looking at a $600 computer.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
Right. And you want to edit photos that you take? Okay, now you're looking at a $1,000 computer.
Mm-hmm. However, you can do all of those things with a Chromebook.
Yeah.
And that's what people are beginning to realize. My wife is on Castleville all freaking day long. you can run Adobe Photoshop online now for free, by the way, at least for now. And you can do it all on a $200 laptop. If you really absolutely must have a large screen, a $300 laptop. You know, and as Dave said, all the other advantages of a Chromebook are there, including the fact that if something happens to it, you don't care. Change your password on Gmail and you're done. That's now your system is secure.
Yep.
Again, although the Chromebook doesn't actually keep your password, so you don't even have to do that. All you have to do is buy another Chromebook.
Yep. Yeah, we've always said the web is the great equalizer, that it doesn't matter what computer you're running on or what operating system you're running on. If it's on the web, it'll probably work. And for the longest time, the problem was Flash, which doesn't work on mobile devices.
Right.
And when they tried it on Android, it didn't work well and ate your battery.
Right.
So that's gone now, too.
Well, but it works on Chromebooks.
And we're seeing the web developers realizing that and moving toward HTML5, newer standards.
Yep.
And so now, you know, in your Chrome browser, on your tablets, less expensive computers because the web and then the servers behind it are your giant big servers and big computers. So you don't need that giant computer anymore. We're back to the giant computer in someone else's basement, and you're just running a terminal.
It's back to the future. It really is. Only now the terminals are graphical.
Yep. And it doesn't have to be in your basement.
Yep. Oh, and by the way, if you look on our website at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, you'll notice that I've written two ebooks about Google, one for Google Docs and one for Chromebooks. So just a mention. Now we're going back to the phones. Our next caller is Tony from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tony. What's up?
Hi, guys. I was thinking of buying an iPod Touch, and I wondered Is there a new one coming out so I don't get behind?
That's sort of the $64 million question. The iPod Touch hasn't been updated in a while. Generally, they've been about a year behind the iPhones, but I think the current one is now like 2 or 3 years behind the iPhones. And generally, they come out in the September timeframe with the iPhone announcements. But this year they didn't. They did drop the price on them, which is nice. It's now a $50 price increment to jump capacities. But in general, we're thinking iPods themselves are kind of on the way out. Apple did discontinue the iPod Classic this year, the hard drive based iPod. So now they just have the Shuffle, the Nano, and the Touch. But we're seeing a lot of families, and I did myself, bought an iPod Touch for my son, and it's everything the iPhone is except the telephone, and therefore not the monthly data bill.
That's what I was thinking.
Yep.
That's why I would like one.
And it works really great for that. You can get Wi-Fi and make phone calls on it with Google Voice or Skype or Apple's own FaceTime if you're going to another Apple device. And so without having that monthly phone bill, it's a really great little product.
Where could I get one? Do you have them at your place?
We have them at our store, yep, and I'm sure the Apple corporate store has them too. Although they're probably more likely to push you into a phone. The iPod Touch 16 gig starts at $199. Although I might recommend moving to the middle range, a 32 gig model for $250. It's only $50 more.
Yeah.
16 gigs is really, really small.
Yeah.
It used to be 8 gigs at the beginning, and they bumped that up too. 16 is really small if you want to put more than a few apps on it, or if you want to have photos and video on it, which it also does very well. So that middle of the road 32 gig model is really nice.
Only for another $50, you can double the RAM.
Double the 64 and go to $300. Yeah,
right.
could you give me an idea what you would be selling them for?
Yeah, the 16 gig model is $200, the 32 is $250, and the 64 is $300.
Okay.
And then just in the iPod line in general, the Shuffle is $50, and so that's generally marketed at runners. It's only a 2 gig capacity, so you put your whole music playlist on it, and you go out and run. And it's very small, very light, very cheap. And then when you put it through the laundry, it doesn't cost much to replace.
Right.
Okay. Well, hey, just one other thing, please. What kind of defensive software would you get for an Android system?
We recommend either Avast or Lookout.
Okay.
Both are excellent products, and both protect your machine. As we said to Andy earlier in our first call, the big difference is that Lookout also has the Find My Phone feature, as well as, if you pay for it, the lockout feature. So if somebody steals your phone, you can lock them out of it.
Would that be lookout.com? Or?
I looked up. And Avast and Lookout also have iOS versions, too, for installing on your iDevice.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, and good luck.
Thanks for your show, by the way.
Thank you. We love to hear that. Thanks.
Thank you.
Always nice to hear from satisfied customers.
Exactly.
Because it's the dissatisfied ones that are so prone to calling.
Right. I do wish there were an iPod Touch device in the Android line. There may be one that just I don't know about, but that would be kind of fun.
Yeah, an Android phone without the phone in it.
Exactly. Now, the phone companies don't like that. And, of course, Apple doesn't like that because they get a kickback from the phone companies. That may be why they're not hot to really advance the iPod Touch.
Or you get one of the smaller 7-inch Android tablets.
Right.
But that's still pretty big.
Or a 5-inch Android tablet.
Yeah, 5 inches now. Yeah. The iPod Touch is a 4.5-inch screen.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's up?
Well, Merry Christmas or something like that, maybe. I don't know.
You too.
Yeah. Hey, I called a few weeks ago about the moving a laptop machine into a virtual environment.
Okay.
And that worked out pretty slick.
Oh, good. How'd you do it?
Well, I'm using, the Virtual Box. And... the other guy's Oracle there, they have a utility that will turn your physical machine into a virtual machine.
Yeah, right.
You just load it in and fire it up, and it creates a file.
Yep.
And then you can import that into VirtualBox, and voila, there's your machine running inside a machine that, you know, has a screen big enough to actually see what you're doing.
Right.
Because I had to hunt around for a lot of files and stuff like that. So anyway, that's... Right. And also, you know, people are still trying to hang on to XP. Well, that would be one way to do it, is by yourself. I mean, you need a pretty good machine to run a virtual machine on.
Right.
But if you want to save your old programs that you still need to run once in a while, it's a really nice way to do it. Just move it to a virtual machine, and you've got it forever.
And what program did you use to convert?
It was a utility on...
I think Oracle has one as part of VirtualBox.
Yeah, I can't remember the name, but you had to go to Oracle's website and hunt it down.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I think all of the virtual machine programs have that type of thing, too. Which is pretty neat.
Well, the trick is that, like, VirtualBox can read Oracle's file format.
Right.
And probably vice versa. I never tried that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So anyway, now that I got the laptop all cleaned up, I'm fixing it up to loan to my nephew and yada, yada, yada. So what I did... in order to really clean it up easily was to just run the restore that's built into a partition on that drive. This is on a laptop.
Right. Yep.
So now I got it built up to, you know, updated and everything like that. I would actually like to create a restore that would work the same way, except with my stuff instead of what HP thought was worth having on the machine originally.
Okay.
Is there a utility to do that?
Norton Ghost used to be the ones, but that's gone. So what's the CloneZilla?
Yeah, that's the one.
It's a free cloning program. So it basically makes an image of your hard drive, and then if you ever want to restore everything back to the way it was, you can restore that image.
Okay.
And CloneZilla is at clonezilla.org.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I've read the name many times and been to their site, but I wasn't quite sure. So it's basically sort of almost a one-step process, maybe a format, and then just fire that program up, and it'll just dump everything on the drive.
Yeah, pretty much. What's really nice about CloneZilla is that it's free.
Yeah.
And it supports pretty much every file system anybody's ever heard of.
Great. Great. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right, thank you. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great, and never forget that we are solely member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edrick.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Tim from Webster, New York on the line. Welcome, Tim. What's up?
Yeah, hi, guys. I wanted to mention really quick that you were talking about Qt PDF earlier. I've been using that for years with great success, so I just wanted to chime in on that.
Thanks.
And the question is, I have family members that have the old-style landline phone that they would like to finally get rid of. They also have Time Warner, but they do not want to go through that service that they offer to maintain their phone number and go through Time Warner. We're trying to get away from Time Warner as it is. So do you guys have any other suggestions as far as that goes, such as the Magic Jack? The Skype is not really feasible. So anything like Magic Jack or something like Vonage or something that
Vonage,
will also enable to maintain
Magic
the phone?
Magic Jack and UMA all run through your network, your internet connection. So they're...
I'm sorry, Nick, I missed that.
Yeah, Magic Jack and Vonage and UMA.
UMA, okay.
All run through your network connection.
Okay.
So they are landlines in the sense that you end up with a phone in your home, but they're not separate from your internet connection.
And then you plug any telephone you want into their box, including a portable phone. So you can have a wireless portable phone in your house.
Right.
We played with Magic Jack for quite a while. One of its biggest advantages is it's only $40 a year. Vonage and UMA, I think, are in the $20-$30 a month, which is often cheaper than other landline services you're using too, because it typically includes long distance in the U.S. and Canada. One thing I've been playing with quite frequently is Google Voice, which is currently free. It's been free for years, and they say it's free through the end of the year. And at the end of the year, they say, okay, it's free next year too. And you generally assign that to your cell phone, but then once you have, or you can port your phone number to it. But then you can use the Google Hangouts app on your computers or your tablets and make free phone calls over Google. So it all uses your internet service. And since it's tied to an actual telephone number, people can call you. So whatever Wi-Fi you're connected to in anybody's house or office, your phone number will ring and it's you.
What we find a lot of people doing is buying one of those $16 burner phones.
If you don't already have a cell phone.
Right. If you don't already have a cell phone, you buy one of those $16 burner phones. It comes with just enough minutes to set up Google Voice. And from then on, Google Voice runs through your computer, your tablet, your whatever. And you can then use it to actually make phone calls and receive phone calls.
What are you calling this again? Burner phone?
Yeah, you can buy those $16 phones that come with X number of minutes.
Yeah, a prepaid phone at the grocery store
prepaid
or something
phones.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're called burner phones because the drug dealers use them and then throw them away.
Right.
But they're inexpensive. They just have a few minutes on it for people who don't need a lot of cell phone use. And they're very cheap. And you can use that phone to assign your Google Voice number.
Are you talking about track phone type thing?
Even cheaper. You can go to any grocery store or a kiosk at the mall or dang near any place at all, and you can buy a flip phone in a blister pack that costs $16 to $25 and comes with a few minutes of time, and then the theory is you buy time to add to that phone as you go along. That's for people who don't have a credit history and can't buy a phone from Verizon or AT&T or whatever.
But TracFone is one of the sort of the higher tier brands.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be a TracFone. You just buy the cheapest one you can.
And then you use that phone number you're saying to get yourself into Google Voice, perhaps?
Yeah, you have to set a real phone number in Google Voice.
Okay, right.
Right. So what these cheap throwaway phones come with is about 5 minutes of voice and about 30 text messages.
Right.
It takes about 1 minute of voice and one text message to set up Google Voice.
Excellent.
And once you've done that, my suggestion is you throw that phone in a drawer, and now you've got an emergency phone if you ever need it, right? But it's you're basically now using that number to have a Google Voice number.
And sorry, if you want, you can port your existing phone number, your landline phone number, to that phone, and then port it to Google. Google has a $20 porting charge, one-time fee. So if you want to keep your same phone number and use that with Google Voice, you can do that if you want.
If I'm through Google Voice, how am I answering the phone?
When I use Google Voice a lot, and when I get a phone call, it shows up on my Chromebook, it shows up on my desktop, it shows up on my tablet, and it shows up on my phone. So if I didn't have the phone, it would still show up on those other three places.
On the landline, too, if we chose that option.
If you chose that option, it would show up there as well.
Awesome. Awesome.
That way, and back when I had an office phone and a home phone and my cell phone, my option was that it rang all three places simultaneously. So wherever I was, I could be reached.
This is great. Then why would people still have a landline at all?
Because with a big advantage of a landline, and this is something to think about, is generally speaking, landlines are powered separately from all other devices. So
yes.
If the power goes out in your home, your phone still works. Your landline still works.
So a lot of people will cut down on their... Is my mic on? A lot of people cut down on the landline service they're using, and so you can get it to down like 10 bucks a month for a landline with no long distance, no voicemail, no calling features, and I got a $7 phone at Walmart that had call ID on it, and that's sort of our emergency backup phone that will still work when the power's out.
If you don't have the internet connection, then obviously you can't get the calls.
Right.
Google. Right. Okay. Okay.
So
basically,
it goes to voicemail, and then Google emails you the voicemail.
Right.
But if there's a blackout in your area,
yeah,
and you have a landline, almost always you can still make calls.
Right. Right.
But if you don't have a landline, you're done.
Right. Okay. Oh, this is absolutely fantastic. Okay. Thanks so much for your time, guys. Have a happy holidays.
You too. Have fun.
Yep. Bye bye.
And we're seeing the phone companies are realizing that people are cutting down on landlines. Cell phones are so common now that people use them instead of landlines. And voice over IP, you know, using the internet to make your phone calls, is getting popular too.
Yep.
In fact, a couple of the phone companies have been requesting the FCC to stop printing phone books. It's a cost that no one needs.
Right.
And most people don't want a physical phone book. Anyway,
right. When my father-in-law passed away a couple of weeks ago, and during that last month and a half that he was very sick, my wife was on the phone constantly with doctors and every place else, and we started to go way over our minutes,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I set her up with Google Voice, and everything we did was through Google Voice and used no minutes.
Yep.
So it was really pretty nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jason, for all the way from Altoona, PA. How are things in Altoona?
cold.
Yeah, summer's almost over, Jason. Get used to it.
Yeah, well, at least I don't get the snow that you guys got off the lake.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? What's up?
So the gentleman who was calling about the PDFs, one of the things he may want to take a look at, since he did say he has an older version of Office, is Office 365.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Office 365 is an interesting concept, and a lot of companies are starting to do these subscriptions now. For $100 a year, you get Office on 5 computers and 5 tablets, Mac or Windows, Android or iOS. And it's a lot cheaper if you have several computers in the house that need to be running Office. The downside is it's $100 a year. So next year you pay another $100. Next year you pay another $100. So some people like to buy it outright, but it's $150 per computer to buy it outright.
Right, I would check that. I can't speak to it. I haven't investigated it myself. I'm still using LibreOffice myself, but I've been listening to Windows Weekly, and they actually sound like, from what they're saying, that the new subscription plans for that for personal use, there may even be a free option.
Well, there's a free trial you can do, and they do have a $10 a month plan, or for students, they have a less expensive plan too. Individual is, I'm bringing it up now. Individual is $7 a month for basically for one license, or $70 a year when you buy the year at a time. So if you have a couple of computers or a computer and a tablet, then the $10 a month option is pretty good too.
For anybody who's interested in getting the Chromebook, like Nick is always talking about, one of the things they may want to check out is This Week in Google. They're always talking about it, and Jeff Jarvis is always pushing that too.
Yeah, they are excellent machines. Now, I'm looking at this, and
yeah, because one of the other features of Office 365 is online versions,
right? And I'm on the online version right now, except I'm actually on OneDrive actually. And what's nice about this is it looks like I can save as and download as PDF right from there. So if I were to create documents online, similar to Google Docs, OneDrive lets me download any document I create as a PDF.
And for online only use, it is free.
Right.
So if you're always connected, which especially if you've got like a Chromebook and you're always connected, you're gonna. That works free, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's two things about the Chromebook thing. First, honestly, where do you go that you can't find a connection nowadays? And secondly,
yeah, there are places.
And secondly, Chromebooks work great offline. I've written entire books not connected to the internet, and it works great.
Hmm.
So, Apple has, the other one, Google. Google has, when it first started up, that was the number one complaint. I can't work offline. And people were saying, and Google was saying the same thing. Where do you go that you're offline? Okay, the beach. But now you can work offline
when
perfectly well. Yeah, when you're driving is the last place you want to work. But maybe I want to work in the back seat while you're driving.
Yeah, so right? Now a lot of cars are coming with Wi-Fi hotspot in the car.
Right, I've written entire books on the train. Right.
The only thing with the not being online is what I'm running into is I didn't get on the mobile data bandwidth early enough. Bandwagon.
Yep.
So I never got the option of being grandfathered in with the unlimited data.
Yeah. You with something like a Chromebook, you can perfectly well work offline. You set it up once in an online environment, right? Setting it up to work offline is very easy. It's talked about in my book. And when you get the offline documents set up, you're fine. And from then on, like I said, I wrote an entire book on the train for 8 hours. And when I got to where I was going, I connected online. It synced it online, and now the book was available to me online from any of one of my devices. So it all worked out really nice, really easy, really fast. Obviously, I could not get my email while I wasn't connected. That's true of any device. I couldn't do research. That's true of any device. But
hey,
beyond
Nick, can
that,
I hold on the line until you get back from the break?
Yeah, hang on. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Jason from Altoona, PA, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, so this is going to be a slightly longer break. So Jason's going to be listening to whatever plays for him, probably the station, actually, for a slightly longer time. But we'll be back. We've only wasted an hour of your life, and we think we'll do that again on the other side of the this break, and we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free like Jason did at 1-800-790-0415. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. Hurtling headlong into the second hour of Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edwin.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we still have Jason from Altoona, PA on the line. What's up?
You were talking about the iPod Touch in the Android market.
Yeah.
I have spent the last 3 years trying to find the perfect solution. I started with the Galaxy Media Player, which was basically a Galaxy phone without the cell phone in it.
Right.
It was decent, but they never updated it. I think it was like, 3. whatever was the last version of Android they ran on it. I've gone through several devices, and what I finally figured out was that there's a cell company called Boost Mobile. You can get their cell phones sometimes as cheap as $2 or $3 off of eBay. I got one a few months ago for $5 with free shipping. Brand new, still sealed in the package. Just don't activate it.
Yeah, a lot of people have done that. Nick's got one he calls his iPod, an Android phone where you turn off the cellular service, and it becomes an iPod Touch, basically, yeah.
I'm running a LG Realm right now that I got on Black Friday. I think it was either $15 or $19. It's running 4.4. They're talking that it may even be upgraded to 5.0 for Android. And in fact, as soon as I get off the phone, it'll be what's streaming the show for me.
Nice. What a clever idea.
A phone. An old smartphone.
Or even a new cheap smartphone.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
And somebody mentioned the people trying to stay on XP. I don't know if you guys caught this last month with Microsoft's monthly surprise, but there was that S-channel flaw that is being fixed in every version of Windows since NT4, except XP.
Yep.
And that is something that can be targeted against the consumer. So if nothing else, we finally found a flaw that says you have to get off XP.
Yeah, you really, well, there's been more than one. But yes, absolutely. Anybody running XP now is absolutely vulnerable to a horrible hack, and there's no fix for it. And if you get caught, no one can help you. It's not that no one wants to help you. No one can help you because Microsoft has no fix for it.
For XP.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Just so people are aware that there is something in the wild that, normally we say if you're behind a router, you're safe. But this one can bite you even through the router.
Yep, absolutely.
So this is
Jason,
what we were expecting.
You.
Is as soon as Microsoft officially dropped support for XP,
right.
The first major attack vector that was able to get in would then start targeting all these XP users that cannot be updated.
Right.
And this couldn't be in a worse part of the system, since the actual security protocols, which govern security communications across the internet, and it gives them direct access directly into the kernel.
Right. It puts them in the kernel and lets them spoof anything, anywhere, anytime, and there's no fix for it. Yep.
All right. That's it.
Thanks, Jason. We appreciate it.
Yes.
We love it when Jason calls all the way from Altoona, PA.
Yep.
And I don't think we can emphasize this enough. The XP is done.
Yeah.
I know everybody loves XP. Nobody wants to spend a buck and do anything else. I get all of that, and I sympathize with you, and I empathize with you. But the simple fact is XP is no longer a viable operating system because it is unprotected. If you use it and get on the internet at all, it is completely unprotected. If you get caught, you probably won't even know it. And it cannot be cleaned. It simply cannot be cleaned. So those of you on XP, congratulations. Have all the fun you want. If you get infected, don't call us.
Go get a Chromebook.
Don't call anybody because we cannot help you.
Save the money on a service call and go get a Chromebook.
That's exactly right.
Because to sit there and wipe the system out, if it gets infected, to wipe out XP and reinstall it fresh, only to get reinfected once you get back on the internet again.
That's exactly right.
It's going to cost you quite a bit. Just go ahead and get yourself a Chromebook for $200-$300. Problem solved.
Yep.
Yep.
I read about an interesting hack that makes your XP think it's XP embedded, which is still being updated for another 5 years. So one of the big concerns were all the ATMs that are still running XP.
Right.
But they are running XP embedded, and that is being updated. But they should have been replaced now anyway.
Right.
So companies doing that still have another 5 years of XP embedded support to get their equipment updated.
Right.
Have you ever run across an ATM that's stuck at the Windows blue screen of death?
Yeah.
It's so funny and so disheartening and disconcerting. You're running Windows?
Yeah, exactly. And not only that, you're running Windows XP.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is Joe from
Chittawaga.
How are you?
I'm okay.
And that's just the way I wrote it, too.
Glad to hear your voice again, Nick. It was, you know, the two guys did a okay job, but, you know, it's just not the same without you.
Well, thank you so much. I love to hear that, but the reality is they did great. They did a terrific job. I fell asleep almost immediately. I mean, what can we do for you, Joe?
Hey,
no, I
you remember
to
this?
Help out.
Wait a minute, Joe. Hold on one moment.
Now, look.
While you're gone, you remember this? Now, see, he can be on talking all he wants, and he ain't going anywhere because, you know what? I have control.
That's right. He potted me down. So what's up, Joe?
Yeah. Wanted to help out your caller there that was looking to replace their phone service.
Yeah.
Google Voice is great. For now, there's a device, a range of devices sold by Obihai that still work with Google Voice directly. However, Google has said that they don't officially support the XMPP protocol anymore. In fact, I'm using it right now. It's an OBI-110. It's an OBI-110. It also does generic VoIP, so buying one doesn't necessarily mean it's a lost investment if Google ceases to support XMPP.
Yeah, a lot of the third-party apps that used to work with Google Voice got shut down when they stopped supporting that protocol.
Yeah.
Right. So Obihai is OBIHAI at obihai.com.
Yeah, that's it. You got it. And there are various services that actually offer incoming only phone service for free. One of them is out in Seattle, which is IP call. That's IPKALL, IPCall.com. And basically, you give them an email address, so they can email you information, and they'll assign a number out there that you can forward the incoming calls to your your box. I guess I should step back and say there is such a thing called an ATA, an analog telephone adapter. That's what enables you to plug your analog phone into your internet connection, and you know it rings, it allows you to dial out, all that good stuff. So you direct this IP call service to your ATA, and all is good. Anytime you get an incoming call, you can pick it up with your ATA.
Right, but you can't call out.
Ah, but Google Voice allows you to call out too with the web interface.
Right.
You select in fact, you can have your contact list if you have phone numbers in there. You just say, call this person. What that does is it calls you first, you pick up, and then it dials whoever you selected.
Right.
There's also another, you know, going all the way across the country and back, believe it or not, it does take time, so there can be a bit of delay for that. There is also a service in downstate New York, CallCentric, that they also have a service where they will give out numbers for free. The only thing is, if you reside in the U.S., they require you to pay $1.50 a month for E911 service. So that, you know, for $1.50 a month, you can't beat that with a stick per month.
Right. And that gives you a phone number.
Oh, yes. I recall, like, the 631 area code.
Yeah.
So for Rochester and where I am over, you know, next to Lake Erie, it's a lot shorter distance going to around New York City and back than all the way out to Seattle and back.
Right.
But there are definitely a lot of choices for ATAs as well. I have the Obahai. I also own, what's now a Cisco adapter. It used to be Sepura. There's also Grandstream. There's literally hundreds of the ATAs you can pick
up. Right.
To do that sort of thing. So the unfortunate thing, though, is this guy still has to rely on a fast enough internet connection. If he doesn't want Time Warner, can he get DSL that's fast enough where he is?
Yeah.
Well, yes, and exactly right. That's the other end of this issue. Whatever you pick up has to have enough speed. Now, you don't need a lot of speed for voice only, but you need a lot of speed if you're doing something else and voice only.
Oh, heck yes.
Yeah,
that reminds me. How's the green light install going?
They haven't hit me yet. They're all over the neighborhood. They're doing the things they got to do. I understand it's slow for a couple of reasons, one of which, of course, is the frozen ground. They've got to do some digging.
And near your house.
And they're all around my house. I was very excited. I put a post up the other day that said there were strange men in my backyard checking my wiring. It was very exciting because I went out and I said to them, who are you guys? And they said, oh, we're from Greenlight. And I did my little happy dance. It was very nice.
Because we told them to skip your house.
Yeah, we told them.
Did you? Thank you
so
much.
Yeah, that's why they're coming through. That's why they're coming into your yard. They're going to leapfrog over and keep on going down.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
We paid extra for that.
Did you? Well done, you. Very nice. Thank you. I appreciate it. So, it isn't here yet, but the day, believe me, you'll know. Believe me.
Yeah, when you said you were doing your happy dance, I just imagined, you know, Snoopy in his usual happy dance.
And strangely, I have the same shape as Snoopy now, so pretty much, That was it exactly. All right, thank you, Joe. That's an amazing amount of information. Thank you so much.
Yes, thanks for having a chat with me.
All right, have fun.
Bye-bye.
Excuse me. Yeah, there are a lot of options for getting a phone, and somebody like Joe, who's really looked into them, has seen all the various options that are available. Many of us just either go with the local phone company or the local cable company and bundle it with something else. I'll be able to do that with Greenlight if I want to.
And a lot of people that have been using cable television are unbundling and keeping cable internet and dropping cable television,
right?
And doing all their TV watching and you know now telephoning, over the internet. So you still need an internet service, but you don't necessarily need a cable TV service or a phone service because everything can be done over the internet.
Right, right, right.
And that's the way a lot of folks are going nowadays. Yep. I mean, there's
especially the younger kids.
Cord cutting is
they've grown up with cell phones being their internet service and not needing anything else.
Yep, yep. My daughter watches a lot of stuff online, and she doesn't miss television because she doesn't watch television. Although now that she's home, she came into my room yesterday. She was sitting out on the couch. She came in the room. She said, "Dad, we have HBO." I said, "I know, honey. I pay for it." She said, "Do we have HBO on demand?" Mm-hmm. "Yes, honey, that's part of the package." I haven't seen her since.
Yep. And HBO is one of the networks that has announced a standalone HBO subscription service that runs over the internet and your HBO Go app on your tablets that doesn't require a cable TV subscription.
Right, right. In fact, they have announced I haven't downloaded it yet. A number of places, a number of station things, on the other hand, have a deal where if you have a cable subscription, you have a username and password for that cable subscription. And if you download the app and put your username and password in, you can now watch on your device, which is kind of redundant if you're sitting in your living room. But if I'm out...
You're in a small room that doesn't have a television.
That's exactly some small room in your home where you cannot see the TV, whatever room that may be, while you're just sitting there. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 19 minutes after the hour. Sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are soundbites.
Now, did they catch it on camera?
Oh, they did. Yeah. I was dancing and playing the trombone.
Dancing in your seat.
Dancing in my seat. All right. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Fred did from Brighton, New York. What's up, Fred?
Yeah, hi. I'm following up on a call I made last week, actually. I had a crash or a corruption on my drive. So I did a backup, or rather a restore from backups that I had been making all along with CrashPlan. And when I did the restore, I basically clicked off all the files that were shown in the CrashPlan interface. And I'm wondering if that was a mistake, because among those files were things like the program files folder, the...
You clicked off all the files?
No, I clicked them on. All of them. Yes.
Yeah, so that could have messed up the Windows reinstallation you had done.
Right, so and, you know, program files x86 and stuff like that was and that may have been my mistake, because it probably put in more than just data files, it put in applications.
Yep.
Including apparently the CrashPlan application itself, which I think is what produced a lot of problems, because when I tried to download CrashPlan after doing the restoration from the internet and then install it, it really behaved very squirrely at that point.
Yeah, because you reinstalled it over itself, essentially.
Exactly. I think that's what may have happened. So now I just want to confirm with you, I'm going to do another restoration. I'll wipe out the disk again, reformat it, and then do another restoration. But this time I'll unclick things like program files, program x86, and just do the user.
Just the user folder, yeah.
Folders.
And in fact, when you set CrashPlan back up again, you can tell it not to bother backing up the program folders and the Windows folders.
It'll be lots faster that way, So I'm just confirming that is the correct path I should go forward.
That's probably the way you should do it, absolutely. Now, save that last CrashPlan that did the full backup, just in case you want it again.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it saves. It's amazing. It saves going back all the way to. You can pick any date in the past. It'll back it up to that point or restore it. I mean.
Right. That's amazing. The whole idea behind CrashPlan. Pretty amazing product.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted confirmation on that, and you gave it to me. Thank you.
All right. Good luck, Fred.
Right. Bye.
Yeah, that's backup is important. Knowing what to restore is also important. This is why I often tell people don't bother to back up the system files.
Yeah.
If you get to the point where you need a full restore, probably there are corruptions in the system files and certainly in the registry that you just want to leave out. So you do a clean install of your operating system and then just add back your user files. The problem with that, of course, is if you didn't actually pay for some of your software, then you don't have access to that software anymore.
And that goes back to the CloneZilla program we talked about earlier, that once you have your computer installed, running, and working, and known clean, you can make a clone, including the operating system.
Right.
And then if you run into problems again, you can take that clone, put it back onto an empty hard drive, and everything is back the way it was. So we talk about that. You can have a fast backup, or you can have a fast restore.
Right.
You can't do both.
You can't really have both. Exactly right. Exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's up?
I had a couple questions about a couple services that you might have had experience with.
All right.
The first one is I have a sort of unique problem. I'm disabled, and my wife isn't disabled, but quite elderly as I am, and would find it hard to take our computers in to the place that we bought them from for repair. And
sure.
I just wonder if you know of any reputable service in the community where someone could come into the home. I know the Geek Squad is nationally advertised. Both of these computers were bought from a local retailer whom I like very much, and I didn't buy these computers from Best Buy. I just wonder if there were any particular service that offered that.
There's a number of local vendors. I mean, if you check the Yellow Pages,
okay, mm-hmm.
They will offer home services.
And you might even call the vendor you bought it from. They may offer that as a service or have someone they recommend,
yeah,
as knowing their products.
Okay, yeah,
right.
Someone they might recommend.
Right. The problem, yeah, the problem we have, of course, is that we don't play favorites here, so
I understand.
If I were to say go to the computer wizard or go to the computer doctor, and then I left somebody else out, I probably shouldn't even have said that, sorry. That becomes...
Any of them.
Right, any of them.
We can't back any of them up, yep, because there are many of them out there, and, you know, it's you're just going to have to do your research in that. I mean, you can certainly go to their websites and check to see any reviews.
And then ask them to recommend a couple of people that you can talk to, some of their customers.
That's a good idea.
And that, you know, that's perfectly legitimate. If they don't want to give them to you, then you know that's time to move on.
Yes, exactly. Okay, thank you.
Good luck, Gary.
The second question was about, I have Frontier as an internet service provider, and yesterday I couldn't solve a problem and signed up for Frontier Security because they do have support. And I did talk to a support person who sort of stumbled through and helped me solve the problem almost inadvertently. But the problem is they want to install a lot of their security software, and which I really don't want. They wanted to get rid of the Security Tango and wanted to dump all that. And I just wonder if what your experience with this sort of service, whether I'd be better off going with a service like Frontier Security, or just stick to the Security Tango, which I really like very much all the time.
Well, I'm glad you like it. Now, let me give you a disclaimer. I originally wrote the Security Tango, so
I know.
I have a vested interest in it, although I get no money from it. But the folks at Frontier are very reputable.
And last I knew, they were using F-Secure as their back-end security software,
right?
Which is a good company.
Which is a very good company. The big difference between the Tango and the product they use is that the product they use also allows them to go in and remotely fix your machine.
Yeah.
Which is essentially the service you're actually paying for.
Right.
So right. In that particular case, I would say that if you, well, in order to get the most out of your investment with them, you should go with their software. But that also means that in general, you either have to learn a new piece of software or constantly call them whenever there's a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you've given me those options. Thank you very much.
Good luck, Gary.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, the folks at Frontier, very reputable, doing a good job with their security. There's no question of that, but it does mean that you've ceded control to them. And that's just simply the way that works. I mean, that, you know, you have to understand that that's part of the service you're paying for.
And one of the things to be wary of is that we're seeing a huge upturn in fake tech support calls.
Right.
People will call you claiming to be from Apple or Microsoft. We had a customer come in this morning that got a message from Adobe. And they're fake messages. It's typically technically an ad that pops up on a website. And it could be Facebook or Walmart or, you know, a popular website. The bad guys will buy an ad. And you get a message saying you're infected or there's a problem and call this phone number and we'll help you. And they typically then want you to install remote access software, frequently log me in, which is a known, you know, reputable program, but the bad guys are using it now too.
Right.
They will remotely connect to your computer to fix the problem that doesn't exist. And typically, they want money to do this, and so they steal your credit card information. And while they're in your computer, they could potentially watch you log into bank accounts, watch you log into to Amazon or other accounts where you have money. So be very, very careful about messages that pop up on your screen, especially if they're not from your software. You know, if you're running Avast, then the message that pops up should say Avast on it. Right. So if it doesn't say the software you're running, it's probably a fake ad.
Right.
The problem that the bad guys do is in the ad, there's usually a loop. So when you close the window, it reopens itself.
Yeah.
And then you close that window and it reopens itself. A couple of the codes that I've read about, it's 150, 200 count loop. So if you hit close 200 times, it goes away.
Nice. Good to know.
Nice. So so you often have to actually quit your browser to get rid of that message.
Right. But the other thing to remember, as opposed to what Gary did, Gary called Frontier himself,
right,
and signed up. So that's a different thing. Gary knows, yep, he got the right stuff because he called them himself. If you call them, you've probably called the right place.
Right. The problem there is people will Google or Bing or, you know, to do a search for, you know, Microsoft support, and the first five or six links is ads. And so it may take you a while to get down to Microsoft support. So I just did a Google for Microsoft support. The first one is Microsoft.myphonesupport.com. That sounds legitimate. It's not Microsoft.
Right.
Microsoft-support.fixusnow.us. That's not Microsoft. So you have to go down four or five links before you actually get Microsoft.com.
Microsoft, Google has a new deal called the Answer Box.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty obvious boxed up thing, and you can see it there on your screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually has Microsoft's real phone number,
yep,
on it, 1-800-642-7676. That's the real Microsoft support number.
But you may have to scroll down to see that because of all the ads that come up first.
Exactly.
Bing is even worse, especially when you're searching for Microsoft.
You really don't. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Whatever for Bing. Good for Bing. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Marty from Bristol, New York. Welcome, Marty. What's up?
Well, I'm working through an install of Linux Mint, and I'm having a lot of trouble.
Okay.
I bought a cheap Inspiron L notebook and thought that would be a decent machine for it.
Sure.
So what I'm doing now is just trying to decide whether to give up on it or not, and I was hoping somebody might have had a little bit of experience with it. The problems I'm having, the keyboard crashes constantly, Chromium doesn't work well at all, it doesn't see the flash installation. Firefox worked a little bit better. Flash worked on Firefox for a while, and now Firefox says it's out of date. And when I click on the update, it says it's in date. you know, these kind of things. And I'm not sure that I have the expertise. I felt pretty good just getting the thing to run. Go ahead.
What do you know what model number Inspiron this is? Is it a 5321 or?
Oh, boy.
All right, not a worry.
I'd have to look it up. What's the deal there?
No. I'm just saying that, you know, that's one of the model numbers that I happen to have in my head.
Okay.
But you're running into one of a couple of things. One is it may not be a good hard drive, and the installation is corrupted. It might be that you run what version of Linux Mint are you actually running?
17 Cinnamon.
Okay, then you're running a new version. My suggestion would be to check with Lugor, L-U-G-O-R, the Linux Users Group of Rochester. At Lugar, at Lugar, Lugor.org.
Whew. Lugor.
L-U-G-O-R.org.
Okay.
Linux Users Group of Rochester, L-U-G-O-R, Lugor.org.
Okay. All right.
One of the issues is they don't keep it up to date, the website. But they do meet every month, and they are more than happy to help new users, and they're the most generous and giving people I've ever met. So if you were to bring that laptop with you and bring your Linux Mint CD, believe me, you would get more help than you know what to do with.
Yeah, they have the time and the location on their website, but not the day of the week.
Yeah.
Weren't they the third Thursday?
Well, is there a phone number on the website?
Not really, no, but they do have...
there is a Contact Us link.
Yeah, okay, I'll do that.
And basically, it's Charles Prophet is the guy running the club, and if you send him an email, it's right there on the website, so I can tell you it's cprophet1@rochester.rr.com. It's public knowledge. He'll tell you all about it, and it just they really, really need to keep things up to date, and they don't, and it makes me angry. I'm sorry, but
well,
there's nine people on the website
now.
Computer
does not have a CD drive, so I installed it from a flash drive.
Yeah,
so I'm assuming that shouldn't have made a difference.
Right? No, it shouldn't have. No, not at all.
Okay. All right. Well, let me contact those. Find folks and see what they do.
Right, and Lugor has its own IRC channel as well. So maybe you jump in there and say, when's the next meeting? I don't know.
Oh, okay.
but yeah, I would drop a note to Charles and see what he has to say. I love the group. They're just not good at keeping their website up to date. They just are not.
Yeah.
They're too busy installing Linux.
That must be it. That must be it.
Yeah, okay. That's a good hint. Thanks a lot.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hey, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour... we are sound bites. You may have seen me doing a dance in my chair, but you missed the patented Dave Enright hip action during the last song.
I'll have to angle the camera down.
No, that's okay. Even point to the ceiling.
Yeah, exactly. Our next caller is Jolene from Brockport, New York. Welcome, Jolene. What's up?
I have a question for you regarding iCloud and sure. my iPhone and my MacBook. My concern is that my iPhone that I purchased or am purchasing with the plan that I have, unfortunately, I got talked into purchasing a phone with only 16 gigabytes of storage space, and I have run out of space on my phone. Actually, this happened on a vacation, and I had to go to an Apple store, and they told me to download the program Box, the app Box, which helped. But my understanding is that if I delete things on my phone, if I delete photos, iCloud will back it up every day, and they will then delete anything that I've deleted off my phone. Is that correct? Do I understand that correctly?
There's two different services at play.
Okay.
There's the iCloud Photo Stream. And every time you take a photo, it will go up to the iCloud Photo Stream so that it can come down to your other devices. So your computer back home can see all the pictures that you're taking when you're on vacation.
Okay.
And when you delete a photo from your phone, it doesn't necessarily delete it from the Photo Stream unless you do that also. So the Photo Stream is a separate album on your phone.
Okay.
The backup file is separate from all of that. And so the phone will back up everything in the camera roll plus program settings and things like that to a backup file. And that backup file stays until it's replaced by your next backup file. So if you delete a bunch of photos and then back up again, the previous backup will be lost, and all the photos you deleted will be lost from the backup.
Because they'll still be in the Photo Stream.
They should still be in the Photo Stream. The Photo Stream only holds 1,000 photos. So if you take more than that, it falls off the Photo Stream.
All right. I guess I'm still... It's all foggy in the cloud. It's all foggy in my cloud.
Yeah.
Right. The best thing to do is to download the photos you absolutely want to keep and make copies of them. Keep them on your computer and maybe buy a specific flash drive to put them on. Maybe get a Google Gmail account that gives you 5 gigabytes. To also store pictures on.
Yeah, you can always upload those pictures to other services like Facebook or Flickr or Google Drive, and then they'll stay until you delete them manually.
Okay. Yeah, I did put my whole library of photos before I took this trip. I put them on a flash drive because I was just concerned. You know, I don't know that I would be mm-hmm. adding more photos, but
yeah.
I even purchased more storage space on the cloud. And when I went to the Apple store, I was out in Washington. When I went to the Apple store in Spokane, the guy said, well, it's great. You can store things there, but if you delete photos or you delete things, they're just going to delete in your cloud. And I guess I'm not clear
right.
what the Photo Stream is versus just photos that are on my phone. The photos that are on my phone are the Photo Stream, but the photos that are in my iPhoto are not the Photo Stream?
Well, Photo Stream syncs the photos between your devices.
Okay.
So when you take a picture on your phone, it goes into your camera roll.
Yes.
And it goes into the Photo Stream.
Okay.
And then from the Photo Stream, it goes to your computer and your other devices.
Well, you see, when I just downloaded the latest update, the latest operating system for my MacBook, I didn't let it back up anything to the cloud because I'm terrified that...
The computer does not back up anything to the cloud. The cloud backup is only for the iDevices.
Gotcha. Okay. Then I feel a little more comfortable.
Yeah. The other thing you can do is so what a lot of people end up doing is they take their computer with them too, and then back at the hotel at night, they will dump all the pictures off their phone onto the computer so they can take more pictures on the phone.
Right.
So that's one way of doing it. The other way is getting a wireless hard drive that you can dump your pictures onto from your phone. We sell the LaCie Fuel Drive in our store. There are similar drives from other companies. But it's a wireless hard drive that you can carry with you, put it in your purse. It's about the size of a deck of cards, so it's fairly small. And you can move your pictures onto the Fuel Drive, or you can move video. Movies are really big as well.
And how big are the hard drives? How much space do they have?
1 terabyte drive, and they also have a 2 terabyte drive.
And about what do they run?
It's about $180 for the 1 terabyte model.
Okay.
So that's 1,000 gigabytes.
That's ridiculously cheap.
Versus the 16 gigabytes you have on your phone.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds great.
And the neat thing with the wireless drive is that 5 different people can be viewing photos and movies at the same time. So it's really great for car trips with the kids in the back seat. Each kid can be watching a different movie on their device and all stored on the Fuel Drive.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your help.
Sure. No problem.
Thanks, okay. Jolene.
But that is a common issue. We mentioned a little earlier with the iPod Touch. People go for the less expensive model that only has 16 gigs of storage and rapidly find out that's not very much.
Yeah.
So, if you can, wait a few more months, spend the next $100 to get the 32 gig model or the 64 gig model.
Right. Because it's only a $50 increment as you go along.
It's more on the phones, annoyingly. But they doubled it. So the phones now come at 16, then 64, then 128. They've skipped the 32 model now.
Right. Okay, we only have a couple of minutes. Let's see if we can get to Chuck from Penfield, New York. Hiya, Chuck. What's up?
Hi. I've got a XP question. And I can see you rolling your eyes already.
You are right.
I have a personal machine that I upgraded from XP to Windows 7, and all of a sudden the printer doesn't have the drivers, and I have to scrounge up a driver that'll make do, or I pick up another printer. My question has to deal with kind of an industrial environment, people who have gas chromatographs or mass spec machines that in a QA lab or something that are tied to an XP PC for, data logging or whatever. When they upgrade to Windows 7, is that whole... I mean, those machines are not cheap.
Yep.
Are they now stuck with buying a new mass spectrometer?
No, if it's a business environment, before you do any upgrading, you want to call the manufacturers of the mass spec or the whatever and make sure that they have drivers for Windows 7, make sure that you know where to find those drivers for Windows 7, and make sure you download those drivers for Windows 7 before you do the upgrade.
But if they don't, then you're hosed in the same way I am with my personal printer.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
That has to hurt. wow.
You can sort of mitigate the risk a little bit by disconnecting that XP machine from the internet.
Yeah,
but it still has to be connected to your network, so your computer can see that data from
it.
So that makes it a little tricky.
Because XP works fine with the machine, and you can stay there. It's the issue is invasions from the outside world.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, and there's. I'm sorry, there's no easy answer to that. There's no magic bullet.
Well, I don't have to deal with it because I'm not doing it. But yep. It just came across my mind when I got to this. I said, "Geez, what happens to all the businesses that QA labs that and machines equipment there can be 20, 30 years old as long as it's doing what they need to do to test the product."
We had the same situation this week. A customer called looking for a PowerMac G4. That was discontinued 10 years ago, running OS 9, so because that ran the rip on their printer.
Yep.
The big commercial printer that would cost a fortune to replace, it still needs these really old operating systems to run on.
Yep. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
You have a good day. Bye.
You too.
Businesses can pay Microsoft to continue supporting their version of XP.
Yeah, but it ain't cheap.
It ain't cheap, yeah.
But yes, this is the pain that comes from an upgrade, and I get that. Apple people went through it when they transitioned to the OS X, when they transitioned from the Motorola to the Intel processor.
Yeah, this has actually happened 4 times from Apple, and we should be used to it by now, but we're not. and so the most recent one was when they went from PowerPC to Intel. All the old PowerPC programs quit working. And if you had old versions of AppleWorks or old versions of Microsoft Office, and typically that's what it is, the old versions, they wouldn't work on the newer computer. And people who wait too long end up having to pay thousands of dollars in software upgrades that are required to work on their new computer.
Yep.
And it's even worse if you have tens of thousands of dollars in hardware that won't work on a new computer.
Yep. All right. Well, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to you to whom we did not get. Please call earlier next week. It's the Chicago style of voting. Call early and often. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. In the meantime, don't go anywhere because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week long. And Michael is here to make sure that not only do you hear it, but he keeps George. You don't see him beat George while the music is actually playing. And it heartens my soul to see it happen. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites on the truly great, solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.